Welcome to Pre-Sources. There was a missionary who returned from his hot, bug-riddled mission to the States looking for help on the mission field. He went to a large congregation with a massive youth group and even many attending youth from the surrounding area. And he presented in glowing words the exceptional response to God's word in this unpleasant place and the need for more workers. He begged for someone to please volunteer to help with the work. Nobody did. After the service, he was in the back shaking hands, feeling rather discouraged about these people who had a lack of a vision. And this young man came rolling up to him in his wheelchair and said, "Sir, have you found any volunteers yet?" And the missionary said, "No." And this young man said, "Are you still looking for someone?" "Yeah." "Would you let me go out?" "You've only got one leg." The young man just asked the missionary, "How many two-legged people volunteered?" Now, would you all please stand? Wow! We have a room full of two-legged people. Amazing. You may be seated. Figure it out for yourself, my lad. You've all that the greatest of men have had. Two arms, two hands, two legs, two eyes, and a brain to use if you would be wise. With this equipment, they all began. So start for the top and say, "I can." Look them over, the wise and great. They take their food from a common plate, and similar knives and forks they use. With similar laces, they tie their shoes. The world considers them brave and smart, but you've all they had when they made their start. You can triumph and come to skill. You can be great if only you will. You're well equipped for the fight you choose. You have legs, remember, and arms and a brain to use. And the man who has risen great deeds to do began his life with no more than you. You are the handicap you must face. You are the one who must choose your place. You must say where you want to go, how much you will study the truth to know. God has equipped you for life, but He lets you decide what you want to be. Courage must come from the soul within. The man must furnish the will to win. So figure it out for yourself, my lad. You were born with all that the great have had. With your equipment, they all began. Get hold of yourself and say, "I can." Go ahead. Get a hold of yourself and say,
"I can."
Try that again. Get a hold of yourself and say,
"I can."
Again. Get a hold of yourself and say,
"I can."
That was way better. There we go. Our goal today is to identify pre-existing sources of wisdom, inspiration, and ideas for first-year teachers. All right? That's what I'm going to try to do. Our takeaway for today is use your God-given resources. These occupations y'all were telling me about just a few minutes ago, we'll get to that in a little bit. But these are bases from which you can teach. You can teach about how valuable babies are. And so on. Right. Are you totally inexperienced? Is anyone in here totally inexperienced? Don't you have experience at something? How many of you took 8 years of schooling or more? Good. So you have 8 years of teaching experience. Right? You weren't the one teaching. But right? You can have the idea. You had the other side of this desk. What about how many of you are above the age of 17? Wow, thanks everybody. So you have at least 17 years of experience at life. And 17 years worth of stories. We'll get to that in a minute too. You are not totally inexperienced. God has given you people. Use them. Each of you has people around you. I'm going to use the story of Gideon as kind of an overarching story for this. Because, like you, he was absolutely inexperienced at what God asked him to do. Yet, he had experience that did help him in the long run. In Judges 6:27, after Gideon had been told to go and take down that grove, did he go by himself to do that? No, he took 10 servants. I would say that's the minimum number of people that should be helping you in this coming school term. Right, and we'll get to who some of those people might be. The first group of people God has given you is a church. I believe all of you will be teaching in some type of church setting. And here is the amazing thing. Ephesians 4 verse 11 says that he gave some apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, and some teachers. Did you know that you are a gift to the church you're going to teach at? All right. I would love for some school board to get some refrigerator boxes and stick their teachers in and wrap them all really nice, you know, and bring them to church some night and unwrap them and say, this is what God has given us for the next school term. And then cut the box open and you jump out. Maybe that would help get things off on the right step. But that's what you are. God has given you to the church that he has asked you to teach it. Gideon's very first job, when God called him, his very first job was to deal with the worship. They had these Midianites who were, you know, harassing them all this time. They had this big problem over there. God said, we're going to deal with the worship first. Right? The church should be your first resource, basically, for all things. God, after all, he's the head of the church, right? He's a resource. In the story of Gideon, when the angel sent him, he said, the Lord is with thee. That was the power that Gideon was giving him. Not, you are such a powerful man, you will go out there and slay 1,000 with your own armor. And someone knows, just God's going to go with you. Okay. That's the important thing. Your family, all right? You will face some touchy situations, unless you teach in a perfect school, which I don't think anyone will. There may be times when you need to discuss something with your mom or dad. That's fine. Right? It's okay to talk with them. Unload on them occasionally. Or even tell your students about them. I don't know how many of you consider pets family members, but I use my pets. Told them about our dog did something, our cat was bitten by a rattlesnake, and so on. Or I know even some teachers who bring their pets to school for students to learn about. That can be a resource for you. Your friends. When God told Gideon to go down to the Midianite camp that night because he wanted to encourage him. I just found this. I think I've read that story I don't know how many times and I just discovered something. Do you know what God said? Anybody know that story better than I did? God said, if you're scared, take Phurah, your friend, or one of his main servants or whatever, with you. And Gideon did that. He took a friend with him. He did not go down there alone. He had somebody holding his hand through the scary parts. Okay? That's just fine. Right? It is wonderful for you to have someone who you can call at 11 o'clock at night and say, I'm scared to death about going to school in the morning. Okay? We need those kind of people. Right. Your school. Your school is made up of a group of people, most likely most of us, I'm guessing, are teaching in a setting that is at least somewhat established. Use the people who are already a part of it. Your school board. Often we think about important teachers in history as just going out there and teaching. But even the Apostle Paul returned to his home church in answer to them after his mission work. How much more should we be willing to answer to our school board or even just ask them about things we're not sure about? Your school board is a great resource. Use them. They're there to help you through your school term. The parents. My first year of teaching, I taught with two other first-year teachers, which is less than ideal, and I was given the responsibility of being the principal. One of my co-teachers was an extremely, she still is that way, reticent person, very much an introvert, and timid in relating to others. She came to me one afternoon and said, "Julian is running my classroom. What am I supposed to do about it? I've tried everything. Nothing works." I said, "Well, did you talk to his dad?" "His dad? But his dad is the bishop." I said, "So what? His son is being rude and misbehaving in your classroom. I can't talk to his dad." "Okay, well then I'll talk to him." "No, you won't." Okay. "How about if you write him a letter?" "That'll work. Yeah, let's write him a letter." So she wrote him a letter and snuck over there and dropped it off when he wasn't looking and escaped and went home without anything bad happening. And the next afternoon, I completely forgot this conversation until the next day. She came meekly sauntering into my room and said, "Guess what?" "And what?" She said, "Julian was trying to please me today instead of me trying to please him." I said, "Wow, praise the Lord. It worked." There is something just, it's weird, but parents are scared of teachers and teachers are scared of parents. Okay, that is just the way it is. We have to overcome that fear. When you have a problem, talk to the parents. Right? That shouldn't be like the last thing you do. Probably not the first, but somewhere in the middle there, all right? Your co-teachers. During that same first year of teaching, my co-teachers, I learned, were the salt and pepper of my teaching. When I was bland, they put some salt on me. And when I was a little too sharp, they settled me down a little bit. I had had it. Rough experience in my home church the year before in which there were some tough communication problems with the teachers. And I was afraid of communicating with my co-teachers, I'll just be honest. In fact, we went for almost 6 weeks without talking more than saying good morning, good afternoon, goodbye. Not sustainable. In one afternoon, they both came marching into my room and said the four words that strike fear into every man's heart. They walked up to me, and they came really close, and they said, "We need to talk." We did need to talk, and we did talk, and things went much better after that. In Gideon's situation, he had to communicate with those three groups of men that were around him. And then the men of Ephraim were extremely upset. He had to communicate there. Right, communicate with your people that you're working with. They need to know what's going on. They need to know what your plan is for the day, for the week. Let them be your salt and pepper. Publishers. Publishers have support staff who are there for you. You will find that the people who wrote those wonderful books that you're using weren't just like you. They thought about things differently from the way you did, or you do. And you very likely will become extremely frustrated with their way of presenting a lesson, or even the material they're presenting. You may think it is the most worthless thing. Don't be afraid to pick up the phone and call them, but be very careful how much you tried to correct them, because it's better off to ask them, "How am I supposed to use this?" than to just tell them that this is junk. All right, be careful with that. But they will help you. And I will warn you that often what they will tell you is read the instructions. And we'll talk about that some more in just a little bit. Right. But use them. It is okay to pick up the phone and call Rod and staff, call CLE. They have people there ready to answer the phone and help teachers. If you're feeling frustrated, you don't understand how to do their program, call them. They have people there to do that for you. Other teachers. If you are a first-year teacher or even a second-year teacher, I highly recommend, in fact, I would command you if I could, have a mentor. You need some mature teacher, probably more mature than I am, to help you through your school term. Someone who's got 10 or 15 years of experience who you can call and say, I'm dealing with this problem. And chances are he or she is going to say, we've dealt with that before. And here's what we did. You need a mentor. I needed mentors. I actually still have mentors, right? Multiple. You need them too. Gideon was a mentor for his people. When they went out there, he said, look on me and do likewise, right? That's what a mentor should do for you. Someone who you can look up to and pattern your teaching after. So it should sort of be somebody who thinks at least similarly to you. Yourself, use your own past. You have no clue the gripping attention you will get from your students when you start a sentence with, when I was in school, I was in public school. And the high schoolers occasionally would have food fights. And as a second grader, I thought a food fight sounded like the most fun thing that could absolutely happen in school. But the high schoolers I went to school with in public school were so boring. They never mistook their food for projectiles. So my second grade compatriots and myself, one wonderful lunchtime, decided that we would just do some experimenting. And we had those nice squishy bottles, the yellow one for the mustard and the red one for the ketchup. And one of them slid the ketchup bottle over to me and looked up the ceiling and said, I bet you can't hit the ceiling with that. And so I gripped it between I locked my fingers and put my hands either side and looked at the ceiling. I gave it a powerful squeeze. And this jet of ketchup just fountained up and nailed the ceiling. And just to, you know, further the experiment, I kind of wiggled it back and forth. You know, kind of like you do on the top of a hot dog. And it was perfect. It was this little thing right on the ceiling. And it was amazing. Like, the whole cafeteria suddenly was watching this wonderful science experiment. And I was like a hero. And so, you know what happens to heroes. People ask me to do the harder thing, right? So somebody slides me the mustard bottle. And I'm like, I bet you can't hit it with the mustard. And so, you know, and I squeezed that one in. And I nailed it. And I wiggled the mustard, too. And it was like the perfect hot dog. It was up on the ceiling. And there's cheers erupted in the whole cafeteria. I felt like, you know, Goliath after he had... before he got to David. Anyway, I felt big and tall. A little bit later, I felt like him after he met David. Because as the cheering was subsiding, this very mature hand landed on my shoulder and said, young man, come with me. It was the principal of the school. Story goes on from there. Well, let's stop right there. That's a good place to stop. Anyway, use your own memories, all right? Gideon, when he talked with that angel, he referred to the stories of God in the past. He said, well, where's that God that led us out of Egypt? And so on. You have your own memories. Use your own. Right? That's my story. I get to use it. You may use it, too, if you want to. Only $5 a time you tell it. But anyway, use your own stories. You know, tell about when you broke your arm or whatever. Your children will be enthralled, and they can hardly imagine how vast experience you have when they hear about the things that happened to you when you were in school. Tell them about your childhood. When I was about 2.5 years old, my father was doing some work on our back patio, and being a helpful 2.5 year old, I decided to move some bricks for him. And as I was walking across the patio, I dropped one. And it landed on my big toe, and my big toe splattered like a ripe tomato. And I'm sobbing, trying to get back in the house, and I had locked the door behind me. And that's my very first memory, is trying to get back in the door with a bloody big toe. My students I tell this story, I don't know, once every 2 years or so, and they never get tired of hearing about me dropping a brick on my toe. Tell them about your school days. When I was in public school, one recess I got in trouble for fighting. And this time, yeah, I was the guy beating the other guy up. Anyway, and I got myself and four and three of my friends got nailed for something that about 20 boys were involved in. And we were told to go sit down on the sidewalk beside the bikes that everyone rode to school. Well, we were feeling very vengeful about that because it was unfair. And so we proceeded to let the air out of everyone else's bike tires. And just my luck, I was letting air out of the last bike tire. And the other boys had all dropped their little sticks that we were using. And the teachers caught me. And I got dragged in front of the third and fourth graders, who were much bigger and meaner and so on than myself, and forced to apologize to them and confess that I had let the air out of their tires. I escaped from school early. I forget exactly how I got out. I think I pretended I needed the restroom or something. And raced home, where I threw the door open and pulled my bike in behind me. Because, after all, nobody else had a bike. And so my father, who was off of work at that point in time, looked up and he said, "Jonah, why'd you bring your bike in the house?" "Well, I was trying to take real good care of it, Dad, you know." And a little bit later, Dad said, "Jonah, why is everyone else pushing their bikes home today?" He said, "Well, it looks like they all got flat tires, doesn't it?" And Dad said, did you have anything to do with it?" "Yeah, I did." And about that time, the most unpopular girl in the town was pushing her bicycle past our place. And Dad said, "You're going to take her bike all the way across town to the gas station and pay them to put air in her tires." So I did. My students love that story. They don't get tired of hearing it. I don't know if you all did anything quite like that. I hope you didn't. But if you did, go ahead and tell about it. Tell your students about things you appreciated about your own teachers when you were in school. Tell them about things that happened in your teen years. I don't know about you, but I had a rough teenage thing. Had numerous accidents in which I nearly died, and so on. And they like to hear about those, as brainless as they are. Tell them about things that happened in your family. Most of you have parents, grandparents who have stories. When my dad was in school, he noticed that there were girls in school and thought that he would be really sneaky and write a letter to one of the girls using his friend's pen. And so he borrowed his friend's red pen and wrote this letter and gave it to this girl. Well, later on, some of the other boys came around and said, "Greg, did you write a letter to her?" And Dad was like, he's got the answer to that one right away. He said, "I don't even have a red pen." They said, "We didn't tell you it was written in a red pen." Bing! You know, they love stories like that, you know? Experiences. You know, when David was... Use your own experiences. When David came before Saul, he said, "I've killed a lion and a bear. I can kill this big guy. Not a problem." Tell your students about places you've been. Have any of you, several of you, I think, have been out of the country? Yeah? Tell your students about, or other states you've been to. And so on. Tell them about people you've met. I met Ivan Martin. He's a very gesticulating person. He's great. He's an interesting man. You can tell them about times that you failed. When I was transferred from public school into church school in third grade, I had only learned sight reading. So the whole phonics and spelling thing in the rod and staff was extremely challenging to my small brain. And I was bombing it. And my poor overworked teacher, who was teaching 25 students in 8 grades at the time, didn't know what to do with me. And one day when I had done a lesson over, I think for the third time, she gave me the answer book and said, "Go ahead and check and see if you have any of it right." I didn't. There was not one right answer. And so I decided that I would just go ahead and fix them. And then I handed it in. If I had been mildly intelligent, I would have wanted to have fixed maybe half or three quarters of them. But it didn't take her long to figure out that I did not have a 100%. And she asked me about it, and I lied. I said I didn't do that. And so she spanked me twice, once for lying and once for cheating. And when I got home, my dad spanked me twice, once for lying, once for cheating. I'd just rather my students hear about my mistakes than have to make them themselves. They enjoy hearing those stories. It's okay to talk about your failures. Gideon even had a failure. He made an ephod, and it was a hindrance to his family later on. But don't just talk about failures. It's okay to talk about victories too. Just one night, a while back, one of our daughters has asthma, and she was in the hospital. And one of my other daughters got sick while they were staying with somewhere else. And I was driving between the hospital and home and talking to God. I said, God, you're not being fair. A father's supposed to take care of his family. My wife and one daughter are in the hospital and the other one's somewhere else, and I'm stuck in between. I can't be with both of them. And it's one of the few times I felt like God actually spoke. He just said, Jonah, don't worry about it. I'm both places. You know, my children love that story because it's bigger than me. It confirms a truth that they need to know. Accidents. Any of you here been to Lamp and Light? Anybody? You know that big hill behind it? I fell down it. Misconceptions. I was in fifth grade before I knew that a spouse was not a furry animal with a long tail. Mine is not, by the way. All right. Your jobs, all right? Gideon was out there threshing when he was caught and told to do something different. Please use your job. Use the things that you've done in the past to help you teach. Your ideals. I trust that you were asked to teach partly because of your good character. Communicate that to your students. Your goals. I hope your vision is bigger than this year of teaching. It should be. All right. If it isn't, think about it a little bit more. Gideon wants to conquer the Midianites and to set his people free and get God's blessing back on the people of Israel. It was beyond just that first fight. Bigger than that. A godly worldview. In this day and age when we have COVID and Trump and who knows what else trying to wheedle their way into our Christian circles, we need teachers whose minds are bigger than that. All right. That doesn't belong in the classroom. And if it comes, we need to be able to go beyond that. When Gideon was done, he said, the Lord delivered. He didn't say, I did that. Confidence in God. God is bigger than the things we face. And one of your character traits as a teacher needs to be humility. You're going to make mistakes. I'll tell you a big secret. When you confess them to your students, you won't be telling them something they didn't already know. When I apologize for losing my cool on the playground, my children are there nodding. Yeah, we saw that, you know. They already know. You're just admitting to something that's already true. Get it over with. Do it quickly. Be quick to apologize. Tools. God has given you many tools to use in teaching, far more than Jesus used when he was here. Books, you're going to use lots of them. Your Bible, use your Bible. It can be kind of like Gideon's fleece. Gideon took his fleece out there and asking God, is this really your will? Well, right here is your fleece, okay? You should be able to find the answer right there. Use it. Teacher's guides, read the fine print. Okay, it'll save you a call to those publishers. Some of those books have wonderful instructions in the front about how to make it easier to teach. Right? So please take the time to read those ahead of time. Handbooks. There's a book called The Handbook for Creative Teaching, a wonderful resource. If your school does not have a copy of it, ask your school board to get one and use it. It is not a book you should read from cover to cover, although I have. But as a first-year teacher, you should just use it. It has a nice index. You can look things up in it, things about planning and so on. Yes, Kyle?
Verlin's trying to give some away.
Verlin is trying to give some away. If your school does not have Verlin Miller, yes. If you need to find one, get a hold of Kyle. Kyle can get you to it. It's okay. He knows who Verlin Miller is. So if you do not have a copy or you're not sure if your school has one, get one, please. It's worth it, particularly for first-year teachers. CLE has a classroom manual. If you don't have one of those, please get it. It's a similar resource, just a big binder with lots of good stuff in it. The book, The Seven Laws of Teaching, I was going to bring mine along and I forgot to. You're going to hear about it later, though, Lord willing, so I'm not going to tell you too much about that. Reference books. One of the things that first-year teachers struggle with is learning to not be the reference book for their students, all right? So we're going to practice things a little bit. So what does synthesize mean? Let me give you three words you should say when your students ask that question. Do you know what they are? Look it up. Right. Where should you look that up? Look it up in the
dictionary.
Okay, you're going to answer these questions coming along, but you're going to start them all with look it up. Got it? You need practice with this. All right. What is Hawaii's state flower? What's your answer?
Look it up.
Where? Dictionary? In the encyclopedia. Thank you. How far is it from here to New York?
Look on the map.
Good. Look on the map. How many Jameses are there in the Bible?
Look in the concordance.
That might work. What other book might you use? That one would help you too. Bible dictionary. Very good. Which verse in the Bible mentions success? And by the way, there's only one. What should you answer?
Look it up in the concordance.
Look it up in the concordance. If you can't remember which book, just say look it up. Okay. Look it up. Very good. Periodicals. You should get periodicals, read periodicals. Christian School Builder, Classroom Key. CLE has light lines. Is that right, Kyle? And yeah, I believe so. Somebody else is nodding their head. Look it up! There you go. Thank you. Thank you, Kyle. Blackboard Bulletin. Use libraries if you're looking for specific information, but I'm going to warn you to do so with discretion. Just be aware that the people operating those are not Christians, okay? Same thing's true for the internet, those of you that might use it. Be aware that getting information from the internet is kind of like drinking from a fire hydrant. Okay? Enough said. All right. School supplies. Use them. Where do you think Gideon got those pitchers and torches from? Let's back up a little bit. Where were the people of Israel living at the time? They were living in
caves.
What would you need if you were in a cave? A torch, right? How would you get water into a cave? You'd have a pitcher, right? He used what he had. That's what they used to go conquer those Midianites. Use your black or whiteboard. Jesus wrote on the ground when that woman was brought to him with adultery. God wrote on the wall with Belshazzar. By the way, do you know what that is? I hope you've been wondering. It's a preacher waving his arms, right? Okay, very good. Paper, all right? So, how many napkins would it take to cover a globe? Nice little question. Make somebody think. It's familiar. Something that your students will be able to relate to. You all know what this is, right? This is a pencil. Also known as the world's best calculator. It can write in any language. There's no number that doesn't fit on the screen. And it has a wonderful delete button. All right, very good. Use them. There are also wonderful things you can do with them in science experiments. Drop a pencil into a glass of water and see what happens and so on. Your class table. Would you three gentlemen reach forward and just touch the class table? All right. What can you tell us about it?
It's plastic.
It's plastic. All right. What else?
It's the same temperature as the room.
Same temperature as the room. Good. What else?
It's hard.
It's hard. Right? Is it rough or smooth?
Smooth,
okay. That's not a wrong answer here. I'm asking you to make a deduction. Class tables can be used for all sorts of things. All right? You can find the area of the class table for upper graders. You can tell lower graders it's a rectangle, or maybe yours is a half moon or whatever. Okay? Use it. Lunches. I use food to do so much teaching. For example, I might tell my students that the moon is like an orange. It even has the little holes in the outside. All right. Or I might tell them that if you cut an orange in half, and then you find the area of that circle, and you would cut four pieces of paper the size of that circle, those four pieces of paper would cover the outside of the orange. Right? And that is why we use 4 times pi times radius squared to find the circle, the area of the outside of a sphere. Use gravel. I have taught division, multiplication, subtraction, all sorts of things with gravel. Some students need something to touch and pick up. It's okay. I've had up to 6th grade students using pieces of rock to learn things. It's cheap. Use your clock with numbers for lower graders and so on. Use coins. If I ask my students to do something with coins, I don't just ask them the question. I just go ahead and give them some coins and say, you know, go ahead and find out how much that is. And there's something to actually handling that. Jesus even did that himself. When they asked him about the taxes, he said, show me a penny. All right? Your globe. A globe can be used not only to teach geography, but to teach sphere and many other things. Use your wall maps, collections. You can pass these guys around. I actually have a lot more of these. And so on. I'm a rock hound, more or less. And you'll get to see some more of my rocks later, probably. But here's just a few of them. But fossils. Tools of your trade. Your tape measure. Go ahead and pass this tape measure around. You should get one of these for teaching metric and English measurements. All right? That tape actually has both feet and meters and so on. Measuring cups. Ladies, gentlemen, if you're teaching teaspoons, tablespoons, cups, pints, quarts, gallons, grosses, by the way, if anybody knows what that is, and so on, use the real deal. All right? Have the students dump 2 pints into a quart and 4 quarts into a gallon. It's worth it. When they actually touch and feel it, they see it happen, it sticks, right? Use the scales. Don't just talk about pounds and ounces and things, but in weigh something. And show them the gram, of course, much smaller, and so on. Use a microwave or a range if you have one in your school. Most of you will, something like that. Use it. There's actually quite a number of things you can teach with a microwave. Use a mirror. Most of your schools will have a mirror in them. Show your students that things get turned backwards. It can be used to help teach the way light reflects and so on. If you're teaching dozens, use an egg carton, right? Cheap way. Even says 1 dozen on the outside. If you're teaching about blueprints, surely someone in your congregation does construction, someone you know does. Get a real one. Don't use the textbooks. All right? They're just too small. They're not realistic. Get the real deal. Get the students out there looking at it, learning about scale models and so on.
You have about 7 minutes.
Okay, I was wondering if my clock was right or not. Thank you. Use tools of your trade.
Ladies, this item can come into your classroom as an object aside from a spanking tool. All right. Although it can do that too. All right. For example, what could you teach with this thing? I'm challenging your mind, that's okay. It's a lever, all right? It allows you to reach things you couldn't reach otherwise. Did you know that this is also a lever? And so, is this, right? Rather than just talking about levers, show your students things that really are levers. And Man, if you use a square, bring it to school and teach your students what all these goofy marks are. Right? There's degrees and angles and so on. It's wonderful. It's been great for me this year. I've been, my daughters and I have been doing some construction work. They go to work with me and they learn how to use a square. It's a wonderful experience. If you don't have a globe in your room to teach spheres, ping pong balls actually work very well. Right? And so, if you're teaching about lenses, you can actually buy these. These are very cheap. Concave and convex lenses, and you can look through them and see that it actually does. I'm going to take a peek at that. And this. It actually does change things. Record some rainfall at some point in your school year. Very simple. Rain gauges are cheap. Don't just talk about a thermometer. Hang one up and let them know that, it's about 72 Fahrenheit, or you can check out what it is Celsius. And see if their math problem where they were changing that actually came out correctly, and so on. Locations. We all teach somewhere. Use the place that you're teaching to help you teach. Your home. Gideon was behind a wine press, doing something familiar. Another beginning of a sentence that will get your students' attention is just saying, at our house, and they'll listen. They want to know what happens at your house. They're interested in you. Look for inspiration around home. We have a little black bird in our community that builds nests right on the side of our house, raises a patch of chicks every spring. But they don't eat seeds. I was trying to figure out what they do eat. And I found out that they're a flycatcher, a little black phoebe. And they sing every morning, only early in the morning. They have a very short song. But I talked to my students and some other folks about, if you had to eat bugs, could you sing too? Inspirations like that are all around us. Look for them. They're there. All right? Just use them. Use your bedroom as an analogy. So my bed is like the verb. It's the big chunk in the sentence. And the noun is like your dresser. It's pretty big, but it's not as big as the verb. Right? Your children can connect those things. A quiet place. Schools are busy places with lots of people talking and asking you to make decisions over and over and over again. Going to youth activities are good, but I would say from experience, there's nothing quite like a quiet place for a teacher. Find one and use it. You may not be able to get there every day, but find a quiet spot. It may be in somewhere in the house. Jaden was talking about the concrete floor in the bathroom. For me, it's often somewhere out in the woods. Somewhere that I can focus on God and let the quietness. Jesus even told his disciples, come ye apart and rest a while. Teachers need that too. Okay. Particularly first year teachers. Your school property. Use your own school property. It likely has some interesting things. Gideon, when he was filtering those people out, he used the river. Everybody was thirsty, right? So they were already there getting drinks. You can use your drinking fountain to teach your students about wind versus water as far as, you know, power. So have them try to blow the drinking fountain water into a cup. It's actually pretty challenging. It's fun. And it's something that's right there. I don't know if you have drinking fountain or not. Your school building. You can have your students calculate the volume of your schoolroom or use the end to show that the end of a building is a pentagon. And so on. There's so many things you can use. Just use it. It's right there. It's part of what they're familiar with. Use your playground. Draw little dots to show the size of the solar system and wow your students. Draw the footprint of Noah's Ark. Use the Pythagorean rule to find out if the ball field is square or not. Simple things. But use them. They're right there. Use your local area. When I was teaching my first year in southwest Missouri, the humidity there is very high, unlike California where I live now. And I had been teaching my students about
the way that light refracts in humidity and so on. We were playing volleyball, and I was throwing the ball up to serve, and as my eyes followed the ball up, I noticed that there was a perfect sun dog completely around the sun. It was beautiful. And so I pointed, "Sun dog!" And everybody was looking up, and about that time the volleyball came down and hit me on the forehead and knocked me off balance, and then I got to exhibit gravity to my students. Use local land features. You know, Gideon used those hills around the Midianites. The Bible says those three men were up on hills, and that added to the effect of these 300 pitchers all going. I love taking my students for hikes on the school property, even. I'll take them out and have them look for bugs or look for plants or look for birds. We've gone bird watching at the school. Brought their binoculars along and looked at the trees, and it was amazing. I think one afternoon we found 20 different kinds of birds in 45 minutes or so, just right there. Talk about local features, rivers, mountains, dams, if you have them locally. A lot of us would be in areas where there are lakes. Have your students calculate how long would it take for the lake to go down if it was running through a garden hose or something like that. Pretty interesting. Use your weather. I talked a little bit about rainfall, thermometers. Sometimes the weather does interesting things. For example, a couple years ago, we had a hailstorm. We don't get snow in our area, and so the ground was suddenly covered with ice, and the vehicles were covered with ice. And we just stopped school and went outside and had fun in the hail. It was interesting. In closing, like Gideon, you lack experience in the work God has called you to do, yet God has chosen you. And He'll be with you. For years, He has been preparing you to teach. And just like He did for Gideon, God has already surrounded you with abundant resources. Use them to accomplish His purposes, for God has delivered them into your hand. And please say the takeaway with me. Use your God-given resources.